Today is March 20th, 2013, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 196. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, daydream believer. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. Apparently, that's my least good title ever because you barely even chuckled.
I immediately went right into the song in my head and started picturing you not only as the daydream believer, but as the homecoming queen.
I would have made a fantabulous homecoming queen.
Oh, you would have rocked the crown. I have no doubt.
Yes. I would have. You know, 196 episodes. We should probably get started working on the engraved invitations for episode 200, because in 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to need that.
Yeah, we just might. Yeah, I hear it's going to be a very special episode. The moral at the end of the story is just going to be brilliant. Tears in everyone's eyes.
Eyes, yes. Indeed. Actually, the real thing that you're going to hear when we do episode 200 is going to be the sound of people passing out, because we actually, at that point, we'll have done like 7, 8 shows in a row on time.
Yeah, well, okay. So everyone, just keep sitting. We don't want you to fall over and hurt yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how you been doing?
I have been doing so dang fine, especially now that I know you really are the daydream believer.
And the homecoming queen.
Yes. Yes. I swear to God, I have this crystal clear image in my head of you standing there. You're holding the flowers. You've got the crown on. You're smiling and looking around, blinking back the tears. And it is just a phenomenally awesome image.
I don't know how comfortable I am with that.
It's okay. Be comfortable with it. It's a beautiful thing. It's a special moment for you, Brian. It's okay to own it.
All right. I will do that then. I will do that. All right. So in between me owning my crown and flowers, we have a couple things we can talk about this week, don't we?
Yeah, but after that, they almost seem like...
Should we just wrap it right now?
Yeah, we probably should.
All right.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ka ding.
And that's this week's Apple
Context. No.
Oh.
We actually have to do the show.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess as long as we're here, why not?
And to Ricky, I apologize for my awful impression of your lovely bass work.
I'm totally going to be an enabler and say it was fantastic. Ricky would be proud.
No, he would not. That's okay. We start with Adobe today.
It's like you read my mind. So, yeah. For those of you that don't know what's up with Adobe, they are short one executive now because their chief technology officer, Kevin Lynch, has quit and is starting work at Apple as vice president of technologies, working under Bob Mansfield.
Interesting.
Yes. And for those of you that don't know who Kevin Lynch is, you've probably heard of a product that he championed for a very long time. And that
Photoshop?
You're so pretty.
Was it Premiere? Was it Dreamweaver?
No.
Is it maybe some of their color management stuff?
Oh, if only.
Well, what product is it that he was in charge of that could have made him so attractive to Apple?
Oh, well, I mean, clearly, I'm surprised you didn't realize that would be Flash.
Flash?
Yes, indeed.
Well, that doesn't actually answer my question, because what the heck does...
Exactly.
I'm flummoxed. I don't even, I mean, Flash is a piece of crap, and it's been a piece of crap for a long time. How did he get hired by Apple? What is the missing information, right? You know my thing. My thing is that my theory is that that, you know, 99.9999% of the time, when someone is doing something that seems irrational to you, there's a missing piece of information. Either that person doesn't know something that you know, or you don't know something that that person knows. Or, of course, sometimes it's a combination of both. But, but very few people are actually crazy. And there's almost always that missing piece of information that will make someone else's actions make sense. Whether or not you agree with it, you will at least be able to understand why they are doing the thing that, until you got that information, looked crazy. What's the missing information here?
Well, right now we kind of have to speculate at what that missing information is. But I have some ideas. And while we're all fixating on Flash out of this, which makes sense because he's the guy that was publicly talking about how stupid it was that Apple wasn't supporting Flash on iOS and how that was going to be the downfall of the iPhone. And we can see how well that worked out.
Right.
Yeah. So look back farther. Look earlier in his career with Macromedia, and then when it was purchased by Adobe with Adobe. And look at what he was doing, not so much at what product he was doing it for. And that's where I start to pick up the little hints as to why I think Apple may have wanted him. So when you look at what he needed to handle, he needed to manage how the software that Adobe was creating, beyond just Flash, worked, how it performed on the various hardware and operating system platforms that these applications needed to run on, and he needed to manage that for a lot of products. So,
yeah, but he didn't do that well.
Well, did he not do it well, or did he just not do it well for Flash?
That is a good question.
Yeah, and when we look at Flash, how much of the championing that he was publicly doing was because he genuinely believed that Apple was screwing the pooch, so to speak, with shunning Flash, and how much of it was because that's his job to publicly champion these applications?
He was faking it, then you know there should be a new Oscar category, because it seemed a pretty impassioned defense of Flash / attack on Apple.
Now, in the beginning, when he was vehemently defending Flash, it wouldn't surprise me if he really felt that his defense was warranted and that Apple was in the wrong. Because at the time, what was the single largest multimedia platform on the internet?
Flash certainly,
and
still is.
Yes, it just happens to be less relevant in many of the areas that it previously dominated.
Yes,
but it's still the big time player out there. So, in the beginning, he may have been looking at what Adobe had and looking at the market share they controlled, and he might have really thought, man, this is stupid, Apple. You guys are cutting off the biggest part of the internet. So as time progressed and he saw that the market was in fact pulling away from Flash, at that point he can't be a stupid man. So he was probably looking at what was happening and thinking, all right, well, I need to continue championing this and see what we can do. And at some point, he had to be thinking, while he's saying, this is the best thing ever, you people are foolish for turning your back on it, at the same time, he was probably thinking, well, that was a nice ride.
Maybe. Yeah, your problem. I'm sure you're right. And my problem isn't that he criticized Apple. I don't care about that. My problem. My problem is just what a mess Flash is.
And, oh yeah, it's an ugly mess.
All the reasons why Apple dissed Flash or Steve Jobs dissed Flash and Apple skipped on Flash. I mean, all those reasons were, I think, spot on and have clearly been borne out by the marketplace.
Oh, sure. So much so that I do not have Flash on my my two main Macs.
And ironically, I do. Because ironically in that I'm the one who's being a bigger jerk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, nature balances things out in really weird ways. Clearly, this is part of that balance, and who are we to judge?
Fair enough.
So now, Flash is an ugly mess, and Kevin Lynch does need to take some responsibility for that, because Flash happened pretty much completely under his watch, both Macromedia and Adobe.
And Flash actually started off something really, really cool. I like the early days of Flash as an animation tool.
Yeah, Flash evolved in a weird way, much like PDF did, because PDF today is so not what Adobe intended it to be. And much like iTunes from Apple, just keeps having stuff smashed into it, and it's become this amalgamation of stuff that no one ever anticipated, including in that package. That's what Flash and PDF both did. The difference is that Adobe managed PDF in such a way that we don't look at it right now and think, how drunk were they when they made this?
Well, we do look at Acrobat that way.
We look at Acrobat that way. Yes,
it's funny. The best PDF creation and manipulation tools are all third party.
Yes,
even though Acrobat does some things that those other and that's the thing. Acrobat does some things that nothing else does.
Right, and that's why I have Acrobat on my computer.
Right,
but honestly, when I need to open and manipulate PDF on my Mac, I just go to PDF Pen Pro.
Right.
And I have a feeling that there are a lot of people that are in the same boat that I am. And I'm saying that as someone that came out of the graphic design world.
Yeah, exactly. You actually know how to do Acrobat.
So, yeah. All right. Now, but when you look at everything that Kevin Lynch had to manage and the things that have come into the Adobe world over the past couple of years, namely Creative Cloud. Here you have someone that has had to manage incredibly complex applications.
Right.
I mean, so much so that I would venture to say there is no one on this planet that knows every feature in Photoshop. And that includes the people that write the code.
Right.
So he has to manage applications like that, plus manage how they are developed for various platforms, and then add into that, he now has to deal with online application subscription and with online storage and online collaboration. So that skill set, I can see where that would be very attractive to Apple now that they have hardware and software divisions answering to the same people.
So you don't think he's at Apple to help iOS adopt Flash then, huh?
I am waiting for someone to non-ironically say that.
So do you think then he is going to be working on iCloud?
I think he will be involved with iCloud and with how some of the pieces for Mountain Lion or whatever the next version of OS X is called and iOS, how all of these pieces fit together.
Hmm. Interesting. And it would also be interesting if he was actually taking a taking more of a direct development role in. I mean, do we have any idea? Is he joining at the VP level? Is he joining yes. at the manager level? He's going to be a VP.
Yes. He is directly under Bob Mansfield.
As a VP?
As a VP.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So he's a VP, although he is lower in the food chain than he was at Adobe.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
because Apple, you know, he was CTO there.
Many orders.
So now, bigger. Here's something interesting to think about. Bring in a guy that has a lot of history dealing with hardware and software together as opposed to separate divisions, and has some experience with building cloud-based services.
Mm-hmm.
Put him directly under Bob Mansfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Bob's days are numbered.
No, we don't.
Sure.
Well, I mean,
everyone's days are numbered.
I have my hands steepled in front of me. Everyone's days are, in fact, numbered. You are correct. So how long is Bob
going to stay?
I'm guessing now that Bob is going to stay until he's ready to stop working.
Right.
So that could easily be 5, 10, 15 years.
Okay. So let's assume, just for the moment, that he's planning on leaving in the next 18 to 24 months.
Okay. Why would you assume that, though?
For sake of argument.
All right.
So he has maybe 2 years left. Wouldn't it be a prudent thing to find someone that you could groom to take over his spot?
Yeah. Of course, but that person ain't going to be Mr. Lynch.
We don't think so, but maybe Apple does.
I would be flabbergasted. Matter of fact, I would be happy to make a wager with you right now. The person that replaces Bob Mansfield in whatever capacity that replacement may be will be a multi-year Apple veteran.
And
multi-year. It would take 10 years for Mr. Lynch to be at the point where he could possibly replace Bob Mansfield.
On one hand, I agree with you. On the other hand, I would like to point out the Papermaster incident and the Broward incident.
Yeah.
Both people that were brought in from other companies into high-level positions with the intent of having them running that division, and that went over poorly.
Yeah, doesn't that actually make my point?
It makes your point in that you would think that Apple would learn from these mistakes.
Yeah, but so it makes my point.
Assuming Apple does learn from those mistakes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Well, yeah, they're not going to bring a guy in to be groomed. They might bring a guy in to just directly run something, but they're not going to, I don't think they're going to pick someone in order to groom them for that position. I mean, you know, there's this whole deal. I mean, there's this whole deal about preserving the culture. There's the whole deal about Apple University. There's the whole deal about Steve creating Apple and turning it into a company that would outlive him, all that kind of stuff. And from that perspective, barring something wacky and crazy, I don't think you can take an outsider and put them in put them at the highest levels of Apple without getting absolute and positive change. I'm sorry, not positive as in good, but positive as in will happen change.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that Mr. Lynch is going to be an outsider for a long time to come.
And that's very possible. And so just to be clear, as I tossed out that hypothetical, what if they're grooming him?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not tossing that out thinking this is exactly what's going to happen. It was just an interesting idea that popped in my head. But I think the likelihood of that is pretty slim.
You want to bet a dollar on it?
Sure, I'll bet a dollar on it.
Really? You're going to actually take that? You're just going to go and throw away that dollar?
It's only a dollar.
Well, and by the time either one of us can pay off, that dollar will be worth probably, 70, 80 cents.
I know. What an investment. Today. Yeah. Of course, we are also facing the possibility that Apple's current leadership has consistently poor employee screening skills. And we may very well be looking at another case where Apple brings someone in at an executive level and then has to spin them back out again.
But we've got two examples of it going wrong. Lots of other examples of it working out just fine.
Yes, we do. What we have, though, with this are two examples so far of those choices going poorly under Tim Cook's watch. Steve was not running the company when Papermaster was brought in.
Yeah, he was.
Well, from behind the scenes. But Tim was the acting CEO at the time.
Yeah, but there's no way Papermaster was hired without Steve's approval. I can't imagine that he didn't meet with Steve before.
I'm sure he did.
Before he was hired. And Browett was hired under Steve, and you could say that Tim was the guy that got rid of him.
Oh, Tim's definitely the guy that got rid of him.
Although,
that's one thing that I really like about Tim. When he knew that they had a problem and that there had been a mistake, he acted quickly and decisively.
And same thing with Scott Forstall.
Yes.
Although, God, that brewed for so long.
Yes.
I mean, losing Tony. I don't know. It's so weird because Scott Forstall is such a talented man. He's so smart, right? He has so, and I'm sure this is what kept his job as long as it did, is that he's such a capable engineer and a capable manager, at least on some metrics. But it does kind of seem like he should have gone a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's easy to say that, isn't it? Really,
of course,
easy for us to say.
Because
sit
we're not running the company.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me put my armchair up a second.
Yeah.
my feet are getting tired actually having to touch the floor.
Oh, I understand.
I will honestly say that I had reservations about Scott for a while, particularly as we started getting into the iOSification of OS X. I put that on Scott's shoulders almost immediately.
Sure. And I think that was prescient of you.
Yeah, not like I was alone. I mean, lots of other people were too. I'm not trying to claim a vision. I'm just saying that I wasn't just a jump on the bandwagon after he was fired guy. That was all I was trying to say.
If you want to take full credit, I'm okay with that.
I want to, but I just can't.
Hey, you're the homecoming queen. It's okay. You can take credit.
Excellent. I'm waving.
Yeah.
I've got my Queen of England wave going.
So, all right.
I'm looking out of my adoring fans.
Oh, sorry.
I'm waving. Okay.
Sorry.
I'm done now.
All right. So on the Kevin Lynch thing.
Uh-huh. Love his movies.
they're really intriguing. Except that you can only play them on flash capable devices.
Sorry, that was a really bad David Lynch reference. But every time I see his name, I think of David Lynch.
Yeah, and I totally got the reference. And there were probably like five other people that picked up on it right away.
Yeah, and every one of them said, "Shut up, idiot."
and we'll have to wonder, which one of the two of us were they referring to?
Oh, me. No, there's no wondering. It's me. And point taken, sir. I'm just going to edit that out. No one's going to hear that.
Oh, good. Good. Editing's magic.
I wonder, because we say that all the time, right? We're going to edit something out. I wonder how many of our listeners, assuming we have any, how many of our listeners catch the... It's obviously just playing on David Letterman's long-standing joke there, right? But how many of them think that we just did edit out something even worse?
You know, I'm not going to say anything because that takes the mystery out of the relationship.
It's true. It's true. Yeah. It's okay. No one's listening. No one knows.
Yeah. All right. So where was I? Oh, yeah. Kevin Lynch.
Kevin Lynch. Yes.
Back to what you said right at the beginning, there's clearly a piece that we are missing because I cannot imagine that Kevin would leave Adobe unless if he was just leaving to leave, then he's looking at Adobe, at least from his perspective, as either a dead end job or a sinking ship. Assuming that's not the case, and he goes to Apple, then what is it that was so intriguing to him, and what is it about him that's so intriguing that Apple wanted him?
Yeah, that is the question, and I do think that there, and just to emphasize the point that you were emphasizing, there is a piece of missing information. There is something awesome about this guy. I mean, you know, you look at the hiring of John Browett and Jim Tanis. Called that one from the beginning.
Oh yeah,
was really, really critical of his hiring. People that knew Dixon's were really critical of his hiring. Couldn't figure it out, and I think that obviously reality bore out that pessimistic look, and it does make you wonder how he was hired. Papermaster, on the other hand, Papermaster is not a bozo.
Right,
he is an engineering super stud, and I personally have always thought that his ouster at Apple was about either pissing off Steve or disappointing Steve, or just possibly he never fit into the Apple culture. He was, you know, he's too much an IBM man. And you know, and it just, it, there just wasn't a culture fit. So, mm-hmm. The point there being that I don't think we can criticize or question Papermaster's hiring, but we can question John Browett's hiring. And
oh, definitely.
Even still, I think that there's a piece of missing information here about Kevin Lynch, and that he is a super stud enough to warrant his new position at Apple. Yes. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. And okay, I have another thing that I want to talk about the whole Kevin Lynch thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes to the Adobe side. And it has me concerned now about Adobe's top-level management. They no longer have a chief technology officer and have decided they don't need one. And instead, the job that he did will be handled by the unit leaders. And they will report directly to the CEO. And that's a decision that concerns me because, first, if the job was something that could be done by all of these other people instead, why did they still have Kevin around? And if they needed him to do his job, why do they think that delegating out all of the chief technology officer duties to lower level management is going to work well?
Well, that is certainly an entertaining question. You know, most of the time CTOs are guys who, like, at bigger companies, CTOs might be the kind of people who really they're like the chief IT guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the technology isn't key to what the company produces, but rather a key to how the company produces it.
Sure. It's like a very high level support role for the whole company.
Yeah. And then at other companies, especially at smaller tech companies, the CTO is often the guy with the vision who can't run the company. He's got the vision on the technology side that's key to the products that are, or services that are being produced, But you know, he's the founder that had the great idea, but doesn't have the management skills to successfully lead a CEO. That's what you have with a lot of smaller companies.
Right. Now,
Adobe, of course, is not a small company. They're doing more than $1 billion a year in revenue.
Yeah, they are definitely not a small company.
And the reality is that their product portfolio is so diverse at this point that it does kind of make you wonder what they really need a CTO for. I mean, Kevin Lynch.
You're going to stumble on that for the rest of the show, aren't you?
For the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin clearly was not the IT guy.
Right.
He was the chief technology officer from the standpoint of the products that Adobe makes. And he probably had more of a specialty in some areas, or more of a sphere of influence in some areas than he did on others. So maybe what accent did I just say so with?
That was kind of a northern, almost like a
Michigan-y, Minnesota, Wisconsin kind of thing, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I have no idea where that came from.
Yeah, not quite Canada, though.
Definitely not Canada. So anyway, that's more editing, man. It's more footage on the floor.
Yeah, this show is like 10 minutes long after we finish editing all this out.
So my point was that maybe Adobe feels that it's at a point where it doesn't need a unifying force dealing with the technology, or maybe Mr. Lynch's, so much easier, Mr. Lynch's sphere of influence had gone in such a specialized direction that they just decided to let that central power diffuse out to the various managers. Or I have a better theory. Maybe this is just yet another decision that they think will best screw over the customer.
You know, my nervous laughter happens not because it's a bad joke, but because there's a track record here, and what I would hate to see come out at some point was that Adobe was just so pissed off at Kevin that they decided to snub him by saying, you know what, we didn't even need your job anyhow, screw you. Which ultimately we'd go back to, how can we best screw the customer?
Yeah, we talked for a while about Adobe. Shall we move on?
I think we probably should.
All right. Let's talk about the another wacky company, Samsung.
Oh, geez. How much time do we have?
But there is not enough time.
No, there's not.
In all the world, there's not enough time. Let's in particular have... Let's talk about the launch event.
Oh, my God. Okay, launch event would be for the Samsung Galaxy S4 smartphone, and it was
painful.
Yeah, I'm wondering if someone said, "So, David Lynch, we'd like you to come up with a surreal event that's supposed to be about launching a smartphone, but makes people sit back and go, what the hell just happened?"
Well, you know, it's funny. I forget their names, but they're two Broadway A-listers put that show together for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it was not... Samsung spent a ton of money on this event. So it wasn't like the... I don't even know what to make. It was in fact surreal. It was weird. It was... uncomfortable, it was awkward, it was painful, and it was confusing.
Yes, this is so not what I expected from Gilbert and Sullivan. That's not the team you were thinking of, is it?
No, it's not. It wasn't Gilbert and Sullivan. So it wasn't those guys, Sullivan. It was just that show was what happens when a Korean company, in this case, an Asian company, a company that is very much not a Western company. I mean, Samsung has huge operations here. My point here is not to diss on Asia or Korea. My point is simply to say, when you take a company and leadership that is very much not of this culture, and they want to produce an event in this country for this country, and they want to use a particular vehicle that is particular to this country, and yet they keep the decision making in their hands.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, this is what happened. This is what happens when you do that. So this Korean company and its Korean leadership wanted to have this Broadway themed launch event, but according to the coverage that I've read from behind the scenes, they kept all the decision making in their hands. So they hired locals, i.e., in this case, Americans, or at least Broadway people. I don't know what the nationality of the actual producers, but they hired Broadway veterans. But then they micromanaged all of the decision-making process. And so it just comes off as weird. I mean, like, one of the things I read was that there wasn't a pair of socks worn by the performers in this weird thing that wasn't photographed. You know, those photographs were sent to Korea and then were approved.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it's the kind of micromanaging that Apple has always done, but Apple is never, Apple would never do this kind of event like this. It's a different kind of, it's a control control in the wrong places.
And keep in mind, Apple knows who their audience is. The thing that I kept coming back to from the Samsung launch event was, who is their audience for this event? Because it doesn't seem to me that they invited the right people, because they had journalists there. And they did this right Broadway-ish spectacle, and that's not what those people needed. But they needed an Apple event where they stand up and say, here's a little bit of hype, here's the product, this is what it does, and here's some demos or examples. Have a nice day.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about, they did, like, whenever they had a new feature that they wanted to talk about, they put on a skit. It was like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, let's put on a show. I mean, they had a skit that was supposed to sort of allow us to understand the real world application of whatever feature they were talking about, and it just came off as weird. I mean, it was all really well produced. As a matter of fact, I was really surprised when I read that they had precisely one start to finish dress rehearsal, and it was right before, it was that same day. Because the Korean the Samsung's leadership kept changing the script, or kept wanting the script to be changed, and they let the professionals do the changing, but then micromanaged the decision making on those changes.
I have been in productions like that where it's really, you're getting changes all the way up until opening night, mm-hmm. and you get one full dress rehearsal before the show opens. I've actually been in a show where we never actually had the opportunity to do a full dress rehearsal The only time it was, or the first time it was ever run from start to finish, was opening night. And that's insane. And you had an entire cast of people that were freaking out because no one knew what was going to work right and what was going to flop. And
let alone their lines.
Yeah, let alone their lines. And I mean, that's a horrible, horrible way to put a production together. And then back to who's your audience? And I think they completely missed catering to their audience.
Yeah, you know, if they thought that they could get 50 million people watching that thing, it maybe would have made sense. But you know, as it is, it was just weird. And it wasn't the performers. The performers were all great. The you know, it was just the execution, you know, of the production side of things was just great. You know, everything was just rapid fire. There was a lot of times, I mean, I actually just kind of found it weird and off-putting, but the performers would effectively break the fourth wall. It would break the fourth wall and start talking to the MC, who is William Chase, who's another veteran, Broadway veteran, you know, that they would refer to him and refer to him being on the outside of whatever little vignette they were supposed to be doing, and it didn't really. I mean, you know, it's kind of.
You know, there's only one time.
Kind of self-indulgent.
Yeah, there's only one time that worked for me really, really well.
What was that?
The breaking the fourth wall and engaging the MC, so to speak, and that's Into the Woods. It's done very well in that musical, and I haven't seen it done well anywhere else. Samsung certainly didn't pull it off at their event. And the fact that I'm sitting here rattling off Broadway shows probably has some people going, where'd you find this guy?
It's okay. We love you. We love you just the way you are, Jeff.
Oh, thanks.
So the whole thing was weird, and then I'm watching it, and I was tweeting. You can, by the way, you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien.
And if you aren't, you should go fix that. Don't worry, do it right now. We'll be here when you get back.
Exactly. I was tweeting as I was watching it, and the thing that I was just really uncomfortable. It was just painful to watch. But the thing that I didn't pick on, because I was you know, thinking about what I was going to be writing and actually commenting live, but the thing that I did not pick up on was what has been perceived as somewhere between chauvinism and misogyny.
And that was something that smacked me in the face, like, right away.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked it up in after the fact communications. A lot of women were really offended because all of the women roles in these little sketches were all very sort of like, you know, throwbacks to the 50s at best.
Right.
You know, do you want to describe?
So the scene that really struck me was I think she was supposed to be a housewife. She's painted her nails and they're drying. She has a drink in her hand and she's also watching a movie on her Samsung phone. And she doesn't want to mess up her nails. She doesn't want to spill her drink. And then there's this guy that takes her shirt off. And that takes her away from watching the movie. And now she's scoping this guy without a shirt on.
All of which was to demonstrate the hands-free, the air gestures and smart
that
smart
the eye-following pause. Thing.
Yeah, the smart pause is what it's called.
Yeah.
And yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so what they're demonstrating, it's actually a very interesting technology and something that bothers me that I can't do on my Mac today. So really cool technology concept. But then the way it was presented came across as, to me, as stereotypical, misogynistic. Women are superficial and more worried about their looks and scoping hot guys than, in this case, that was all that was there.
Okay, and I'm going to take the contrarian position on that, sort of. Because I think that, for instance, women doing their nails and needing to do something when they're doing nails actually is something that happens. Mm-hmm. Pretending that it doesn't happen is a bit irrational to me. And women watching a hot guy taking off a shirt, pretty darn common. Maybe not quite as common as a guy watching anything that a woman does, but it is common. I didn't find that content to be chauvinistic or misogynistic, but the problem is that it wasn't balanced by anything that wasn't along right. those lines. There were no like female executives needing to, you know, do something while they're, I don't know, doing a
all right, know,
presentation
here's,
or listening
here's
to people
how they
or
could
whatever.
Have done that without it coming across so offensive. Instead of having the housewife sitting there doing her nails and scoping the worker outside, it's a businesswoman walking down the street and she has her, you know, coffee in her hand and is doing something on her phone, and she sees a construction worker and she stops to look at him. Now, you've taken it out of the house. You've taken it out of the, oh, women are all superficial and worried about their nails thing. And you've put a woman in a leadership role doing what we all do, which is stopping and going, hey, that one looks – well, okay, where we kind of objectify each other. But, you know, stopping to admire someone that looks good.
They could have had the woman being distracted by something at work too.
Sure,
like where she's got to take a phone call or I mean, yeah, or
right.
whatever.
Or her male assistant comes in and has a paper she needs to sign or something.
Right.
Okay.
There's lots of ways they could have done that. The overall criticism that. All the female roles in this production were all,
portrayed as a little bit more subservient.
Yeah, you know, and this throwback to the, you know, to the 1950s that never actually was. I mean, that part of the criticism is absolutely valid. I mean, it was there. If you look at the individual sketches, I don't really have a problem with any of the individual sketches, but I have a problem with the whole. And according to the producers, they blame that on the fact that they only had the one run through, and basically they were saying that they didn't really have time to catch that. And if they had caught that, they would have absolutely have fixed it, and that they were really surprised by the criticism. So, which is fine on their part. I mean, sure. I don't think there was anything evil here conspiring to make this happen. I just think
it's just the way all the pieces ended up fitting together in the end.
Yeah. And, you know, and also the people making decisions in Samsung's leadership, whoever is in charge of this, shouldn't have been doing it.
No,
it wasn't good. The whole thing. It just wasn't. It was just stupid. I'm just going to say it. The whole thing was just freaking stupid. It was an awful way to do a product launch, and it was just dumb. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I hated it. Stupid. It was embarrassing. People should be fired.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it right there in one word. The event was embarrassing.
Yeah, so you know, I'm now embarrassed that I was at all even, you know, defending any aspect of this stuff, because the whole thing was just start to finish, it was just plain bloody freaking awful.
Yeah, it was so not the way to launch a new product.
No, and let's talk about the specifics too. Like my biggest takeaway and the thing that distracted me from the chauvinism was that Samsung didn't mention Google once, and they didn't mention Android once.
That's very interesting.
You know, I think it's clear that Samsung, of course, wants to differentiate its products from the other Android products that are out there. And the company has delusions that they can be Apple. They have delusions that they're innovative. They have They have delusions that they matter. And in my opinion, they don't. In my opinion, they are a Me Too wannabe company. all of whose success has been written on the backs of their betters, and that includes Google, and that includes Apple.
Okay, so I'm going to disagree with you only a little, and I'm going to say Samsung actually does matter in this space, and that's because the company is so big and can make so many products that simply by their sheer volume, they end up mattering. Where
no, you're totally right there, and I didn't mean it that way. I meant that they mattered in terms of being a force of innovation.
Oh, okay. Yep, I'm totally with you on that.
Because I don't think they are. Like the software features that they showed were a combination of redundant features that are already on Android, are likely to be better on Android, are likely to always be better on Android because of Google's power.
Right.
And then some other features that were kind of useful. And some the remaining features are things that sound cool that will probably never actually be used, like the bumping thing. I don't have you seen anybody bumping in the wild, bumping their phones together?
Yes. Do you remember after the iPhone came out, there was a little app that did a bump to share thing, and you could send contacts back and forth?
Mm. And no, I don't.
I remember getting it because at the time, there's simply nothing out there for people to exchange contacts. We're used to having our palms and Treos where we could beam information to each other. So this little app shows up, and I tried it a few times, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess it works. And then I'm at some event where I see one guy hold up his phone, and this other guy who had just gotten it, had no social skills, didn't understand how it worked, slams his fist into the first guy's fist. The first guy's iPhone goes flying through the air and smacks down on the floor. And my immediate reaction was to pull my iPhone out of my pocket and delete the app. And so that was my experience with the bumping thing. And I'm just not going for it now.
Well, I mean, maybe people are out there bumping all the time and exchanging stuff, but I don't know.
To be fair, people are all the time. Just right now, we're talking about in a technological sense.
Yeah, I'm talking about specifically.
But I've been to parties and I've seen people bumping and exchanging, and I'm no longer talking about technology at all. I should come back on topic.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
where did that come from?
I shouldn't be allowed out in public. I'm sorry.
So, I don't know. Maybe that's going to be a cool thing at some point. Maybe. I doubt it, but maybe people are going to be the music share. It allows up to 8 devices to play the same song synced so that you effectively have up to 8 speakers playing the music at the same time.
And that feature will forever now be associated, in my mind, with West Side Story. It's your fault, Brian.
I will accept blame for that. I quip that, you know, maybe it's going to be so awesome that you're going to have roving gangs of GS4-wielding hipsters roaming the streets of New York City and San Francisco, reenacting scenes from West Side Story. Pow! You know, just like all over the place. You know, maybe everyone's going to be doing this. I doubt that. It seems like it's a cool. I mean, so like being able to sync the songs so that they're all playing at the same time is actually quite the feat.
Yes. Yeah. Because the latency can become a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That could absolutely be. I mean, it's a solution in search of a problem. I mean, if I want to hear, music, I don't want to hear it from a you know, like if my issue is volume, hearing it from smartphone speakers is not the solution to me. I don't know. Maybe that we haven't seen it. Maybe it's just going to be great. Maybe it's just going to be the niftiest thing ever. Maybe the air gestures. it sure looks nifty. I was a lot more gung-ho about that than it seems like a lot of other folks were. But I don't. I mean, is anybody actually going to be doing that stuff?
The part that really intrigued me was the eye tracking. So in the video part where the woman looks away and the video stops, that's what I found intriguing. That's where I see the coolness, because if I can have my smartphone, my tablet, and my computer all tracking my eyes and using that as part of my navigation system, that's really cool.
It is, but even there, the notion, I mean, imagine every time you look away from your device, the video stopping.
Now, what I'm picturing is, as I'm working on my computer across dual displays, and I need to have one window active, and as I'm scanning across my screen, I stop, and now I stare at that window, and it pops up as my active window. And then I need to work in another window, and I'm looking at that, and now it pops up as my active window. That's where I see it as really cool, because now I don't have to tab between applications. And I know that's not what they were doing, but that's what I want them to do. And that, and the fact that they can monitor enough to be able to pause a video when I look away, that tells me that the foundation is there to be able to take it to the next step, where I can select what window I need to be working in on my computer simply by looking at it.
Yeah, fair enough. And that could come, but that's not, I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with the GS4 at all.
Oh, I'm aware of that. And clearly by some of the tangents I've gone on already, I'm not overly concerned about being relevant today.
Fair enough. As far as using that, I mean, you know, again, we haven't tested it, right? We don't know. This could be the greatest thing ever. Maybe there's a if I were doing it, I would want to make a delay. Like, you know, if you look away for 2 seconds or a second, I'm sure there's a way to study the ergonomics of this. But you know, like, imagine watching a video on a subway.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you look away, your video pauses. Well, you know, the reality is that the way we work as people, we're going to look away, but we're going to keep hearing. Right. We don't want it to pause. We don't want it to pause every 20 seconds. That's right. I mean, that's going to be bloody awful. It's going to make for a bloody miserable experience. You know, and I think the same thing is, I mean, our eyes, we're hunters. Right, you know, something moves and catches our eye. We look away, and we don't necessarily want the video to pause. I don't know. If you can turn that off on the GS4, which I'm assuming you can, I'm assuming that most people are going to end up turning it off because it's not going to be very practical. But we'll see.
Yeah, I see potential in some of these features, but I question the practicality.
Yeah, exactly. And so the entire launch event was spent on the display, which should be fantabulous,
mm-hmm.
right? 441 pixels per inch. So, you know, it's even higher resolution than the Retina display. It should just look incredible. I mean, we'll have to see.
At what point do we hit a resolution where we can't see the difference anymore, and it doesn't matter how many pixels are packing in there?
I don't know. I think in this case, the key is that you can watch a full 1020p, 1080p, full HD movie on your smartphone. I think that's more important than the fact that it's a higher, because, you know, Apple says, when Apple talks about the Retina display, it's how far you can distinguish it when the iPhone or iPad is X far away from you.
Right.
Right. So, you know, if you bring your iPhone with a Retina display close enough, some people will be able to distinguish the individual pixels. Right.
Right.
And so in this case, for what that's worth, I mean, the reality is, of course, that we don't ever do that. But So whether or not the bragging rights of having a higher pixel density than the Retina display is valid, whether or not that's valid, what is valid is that the GS4 can play full 1080p movies without any adjustments. And that's pretty amazing.
Yes, it is.
And that's pretty amazing. So they talked about that. They talked a little bit about the two new sensors. There's a temperature and humidity sensor, and then, of course, the sensor they're using for the gestures. Mm-hmm. So those are two new gestures that app makers will be able to tap. Android app makers are actually specifically GS4 app makers. Of course, that's a problem in and of itself.
Yes.
And then the whole rest of the time was spent talking about these new software features that we've already gone over. And no time was spent talking about Android. No time was spent talking about Jelly Bean, which is, without a doubt, the best Android yet, and probably the first really use, in our opinion, the first iOS competitor, true competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't talk about Google Now, which is the most compelling Android feature of all. And they didn't even mention this stuff.
And it's... All right, so the fact that Android was never mentioned isn't that big of a surprise to me, because Samsung's thing is all about their brand. And they want people, I think, ultimately to associate Android with Samsung, not as a tool that they get from Google, but more as that's... They want people to think it is from Samsung.
I think they're going to go even further than that, Jeff. I mean, I think you're right in terms of they want Samsung to be the premier Android platform, the hardware maker, right? I think you're spot on there, but I think that it's even different. I think that they're going to either fork Android, or if Tizen works, I think that's how you pronounce it, but that's the open source operating system that's being backed by Intel.
Mm-hmm.
That if Tizen ends up being viable, which I have strong doubts about, that they're going to end up leaving Android, or at least de-emphasizing Android, in order to promote their own thing. I think that they've got a lot of Apple envy, and that they want to be a whole widget ecosystem, and that they think they've got the chops to do it. And I don't. I don't think they've got any of that. And I think that not talking about Google Now, they should have been talking about the GS4 as the best Google Now device on the planet.
See, and Google Now, I think, is a very compelling feature.
Yeah, we talked about that, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
And they just didn't.
Well... Yeah, I think you're right. It comes down to Samsung wanting to appear as the whole widget, as opposed to a company that is using a Google product as a platform for their hardware.
Yep. It's just weird. And it's just weird. And what's been really interesting after the fact is that I was pretty impressed with the GS4 in terms of the device. And it has been greeted as really ho-hum and iterative and no big deal and who cares. And, you know, Apple stock went up and the Samsung stock went down. And, clearly no one really thinks that the GS4 was definitely not the kind of device that would make people wanting an iPhone crazy. That's for sure, but I was really surprised at the depths of the meh greeting of it.
So Samsung yet again managed to copy something from Apple, because every time Apple releases a new iPhone, the reaction from the analysts is meh.
Yep.
Yeah. Well done, Samsung.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. Of all the places that Samsung has copied Apple, you know, you already touched on this, but they should have copied Apple's brand of keynotes.
Yes.
And then, listening to the CEO talk was awful. It was just awful. His, you know, he, the dude's a badass. He runs a huge company. He is clearly capable. He is clearly smart. And quite frankly, his English kicks the butt out of my Korean. But his English is heavily accented. It was very difficult to listen to. And I'm pretty sure at one point he said that the GS4 would touch you in places. I'm pretty sure he said that. I haven't gone back to check, but
all right. So now me going off topic and saying I've been at parties where I've watched people bump and exchange things becomes relevant. In a totally inappropriate way, of course.
Of course. All right. Well, we've already gone pretty long on this one.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah, I think we could probably go about another hour ranting about this this event. But
right. But I think most of our listeners, their commute to work is just about to wrap up.
Yeah. Let's cut while we can, eh?
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. Are you going to actually stop me from going into the wrap-up this time, or do I actually get to do it?
No, it's all you this time.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context
Machine. Hey, man, I was wondering... I kid.
Oh, that was awesome. The thing is, I was expecting it. It didn't happen right away, and your comic timing was brilliant because when it did happen, I actually was surprised.
Thank you.
Well done. All right, I'll try again. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow my account, my Twitter account at TM O'Brien. I got to change the wording of that. TM O'Brien, that's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Thanks, CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. That's all for this week.
And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.